Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Gerstein for Appellant Kajarian.
Excuse me, are you not able to stand up?
I have difficulty.
Okay, well, that's fine.
I have currently a back problem that causes pain when I'm standing in one place for a while.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I was going to comment on that and apologize. Your Honors, this is a case in which there was undisputed error that gave rise to this 15 years to life sentence for second-degree murder. And the question is one of prejudice. To begin with, the question is this. The State Court of Appeal applied the Chapman standard and concluded this was harmless, this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. It is our contention that that was an unreasonable application of the Chapman standard, and it was unreasonable because there is no reasonable argument on the basis of which one could conclude that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The principal contention seemed to be that this was a case in which, because the jury found Kajarian guilty of arson, and they found him guilty of second-degree murder because the court said that they could, that the jurors, if they hadn't had that option, would have found him guilty of first-degree murder. Therefore, the judge was doing him a favor by making this error.
The error was certainly, in a technical sense, in your client's favor, right? Because what he told them wasn't so. In fact, if they found him guilty of arson, they were supposed to find him guilty. It wasn't so as a legal matter. I mean, the juries can do what they want, but as a legal matter, if they found him guilty of arson, they were supposed to find him guilty of first-degree murder.
Yes, Your Honor, that's the case, but there's no reason to believe that they had concluded at that point or later. Of course, it was a slightly different jury that finally decided the matter. No reason to believe that they concluded that at that time that he was guilty of arson. They were considering the options. Yes, Your Honor.
Finish. I'm sorry, I didn't mean
to. I was just going to say they were considering the options, and the options they were given really were three: first-degree murder, second-degree murder, or manslaughter. And they were told that they could decide yes, guilty on arson and guilty on second-degree murder. That was an inappropriate option. They shouldn't have had that option. Our contention is very simply that we don't know what they would have decided if that option had been taken away from them. They had been told the only way that you can find this defendant guilty of arson is by also finding that he was guilty of first-degree murder. They might have pulled back from that and chosen manslaughter and not guilty of arson instead. And there's no basis on this record for concluding that that is an option that they could not have chosen. Therefore, it is not reasonable to conclude.
We don't have anything in the record because there was no court reporter in the jury room. So we don't know. But, I mean, first of all, jurors are presumed to follow the instructions of the court, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
And the instructions of the court were, if you find the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of arson, you shall also find him guilty of first-degree murder under the felony murder statute or whatever.
Yes.
And it just simply seems to me that, and you're not challenging the insufficiency of the evidence for the arson conviction, so there's adequate and ample basis in the evidence to find the defendant guilty, the petitioner guilty of arson. And it seems to me that pointing to the lack of evidence in the record doesn't really get you anywhere, because whenever and I don't think it matters when the jury found the evidence sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt to find him guilty of arson, had it not gotten that instruction, and if we accept the presumption, which I think is sort of ironclad, that the jury then would have followed the instructions, you find him guilty of arson. Ladies and gentlemen, you find him guilty of first-degree murder. I think that's the state's position, as I understand it, on, quote, the benefit. They gave him, unlike Keeble, he got the benefit of a lesser-included offense instruction, And it's very hard for me to imagine that the jury finding him guilty on the basis of sufficient evidence of arson, they would have jumped all the way down to voluntary to manslaughter. So that's the problem I have with your position.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, we simply contend this, that in Keeble, in the cases where the defendant was denied an instruction on an additional option, that made a difference. Those were cases in which the result was in accordance with the law. Those were cases in which the jury found the defendant guilty in accordance with the instructions, with lawful instructions. In spite of that, the Supreme Court in Keeble and other courts following it came to the conclusion that there could have been a difference if another alternative had been put into the picture. That is to say, that a jury that came to one conclusion that was in accordance with law, in accordance with the evidence, in accordance with the instructions, could have come to a different conclusion.
I gather
had there been this option.
Your argument depends squarely on the proposition that the finding of guilt on arson was not inevitable.
Absolutely.
It may have been supported by substantial evidence, but it wasn't. A jury could have found otherwise based on the evidence as well.
Absolutely. A jury could have found him not guilty of arson on the basis of the evidence and the instructions given, because could have concluded that he did not have the state of mind required for arson.
Which is what?
Which is intentionally a setting a fire.
So what's the theory under which he would have been not guilty applying that standard?
Well, Your Honor, what we know about his state of mind, of course, he is described by Dr. Markham as being schizotypal, having a potential for delusions, having tunnel vision. What Dr. Markham said is that the defendant said that voices told him to pour gasoline on the floor. That's what he did. A fire resulted when a heater cycled on and ignited the gasoline. Did he intend to have the fire? Well, that's a question. And it's a question which the jury could have decided in the negative on the basis of the evidence. This is a situation in which...
As an insanity defense or diminished capacity?
Well, not. It's simply that he did not form that intent, Your Honor. Simply that he did not form that intent. The prosecution did not even claim that he intended to kill his grandmother, although he poured the gasoline in her room. Clearly, his thinking was disorganized. He was under delusions. It is reasonable to come to the conclusion, the jury could have come to the conclusion in this situation, that he did not form that intent. Though there was no insanity defense made, but there was the contention made on the basis of Dr. Markham's testimony that he could well not have formed the intent to set the fire, that he could well not have consciously disregarded the risk that he was creating to his grandmother.
But again, don't we presume that the jury, in reaching the arson verdict, found beyond a reasonable doubt, despite all the evidence, other evidence, he was guilty of intentionally setting that fire?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but as is the case, when the jury is denied a, let's say, third option, giving them an additional option that shouldn't be there could change the picture. It is the case that they found arson beyond a reasonable doubt. It is also the case that they could have found otherwise, and that they could have been influenced by the stark fact that if they found arson...
And it's your contention under Keeble and so forth that they could have found something different
Absolutely, Your Honor. It would not have been against...
It entitles him to habeas relief.
Yeah, it would not have been against the law for them to decide not guilty of arson and guilty of manslaughter.
But to go
that
back
was
to,
a lawful verdict.
To go back to what Judge Carr has been saying, the second-degree murder instruction here was not incorrect. You're not attacking that, is that right?
It was incorrect. That is to say, the instruction that they could find second-degree murder and arson...
I understand, but the instruction, the basic instruction of second-degree murder. I mean, you seem to be arguing that somehow what the judge's additional instruction negated the requisite malice that was in the basic second-degree murder instructions, but why and how?
Because, Your Honor, having been told that they could find second-degree murder and arson, looking at all the instructions together, the instruction on murder stating that murder is killing with either express or implied malice or in the course of an arson, and then being told, yes, second-degree murder may be based on either express or implied malice. Putting them together, what that says is that second-degree murder, like first-degree murder, may be based upon express, implied malice, or the fact that it took place in the course of an arson. And that would negate the malice requirement. Instructions appeared, that was an option they were given.
That suggests that there's some room between arson and implied malice, that there's some space there. What's the space?
Oh, the space, Your Honor, is that all you have to show for arson is that there was an intention to set a fire. For implied malice,
you have to know that it's reckless disregard of life.
Yes, that there has to be a conscious
doubt about whether he knew his grandmother was there, but there's no doubt that he knew his grandmother.
The question is, was he conscious of the risk to his grandmother? And again, on the basis of the record made, on the basis of Dr. Markham's testimony, he may well not have been conscious of that risk. Everybody said he loved his grandmother. He had no intention of hurting her. It makes no sense, but a great many things that this young man did made no sense.
Okay, your time is up. We'll give you a minute.
Thank you
very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Deputy Attorney General Viet Nguyen for the Warden. Here, the trial court erred under California law when it instructed the jury that petitioner could be convicted of both arson and second-degree murder. However, petitioner was not prejudiced by the erroneous instruction, but benefited from it.
Let me ask you something. The jury's question was the following: can we find petitioner guilty of second-degree murder with a guilty on arson? And the answer was yes. Right. So in other words, the judge didn't actually spell anything out. He just said yes.
Correct.
Is that right? And the jury's question couldn't have meant, if we find guilty on arson, is that enough to find second-degree murder?
I think reading the instructions as a whole, it doesn't give that. I mean, explicitly in the second-degree murder instructions where it said that malice is required.
I understand that, but your opposing counsel has posited that the jury might they have been asking, since you can get first-degree murder simply by finding an arson, can you get second-degree murder simply by finding an arson?
That's not how I read the question. My understanding of the question is, I just think, based on the instructions, I think they asked, does the arson compel a first-degree murder conviction under the felony murder statute?
Right. That's what they're asking.
Yeah, they're asking if it compels it, but I don't think they're asking if it also compels a second-degree murder. Yeah, I just think they're asking, does an arson finding compel a second-degree murder verdict?
Well, and they didn't say anything about first-degree murder. They only talked about second-degree murder.
I mean, first-degree murder, sorry.
Right, they didn't mention first-degree murder. So
because
why isn't a perfectly sensible understanding of what they were asking was, does it also compel a second-degree murder, i.e., is it enough for a second-degree murder if we otherwise want to do a second-degree murder?
Because I think in the instructions in first-degree murder, they're explicitly instructed. In this case, they're only
They were obviously confused about something, right? Because the instructions were also clear, or you would say they were clear, that you could not, in fact, find second-degree murder if you found an arson.
Correct.
So they were confused about something, and they were asking some question.
Correct.
And the question is, either version of which is counter to the original instructions. So, therefore, we're dealing with what inconsistent with the original instructions were they asking?
You know, based on my reading, my interpretation of the record, they're asking if, because the first-degree murder instruction, it wasn't, they were only instructed on felony murder. And based on that instruction, they were instructed that if a finding of arson is made, it compelled the first-degree murder instruction.
They didn't say a word about first-degree murder.
They didn't say a word about first-degree murder.
So that's the less likely question, is it not? I mean, it might have been nice if the judge had actually said something other than yes. But since he said yes, we're stuck with interpreting the question.
Correct. And I think the district court found that this question didn't indicate they were confused on the arson charges. And so...
Yeah, but maybe they were hung or heading towards being hung on the arson charge. Maybe some... They were split on that. And somebody back in the jury room said, hey, look, you know, I don't want to commit this kid a murder. He set a fire. You know. Let's see if we can do something else.
And but then that would be, I guess, presuming they wouldn't follow their instructions.
How long did the jury deliberate for?
The jury that convicted him deliberated for 2.5 days. There was a time in there where one of the jurors got excused. And after he was
days? Excused, I thought it said 2 weeks. Is that wrong?
It wasn't 2 weeks. It was... I think it's laid out in the district court's opinion, but as constituted, the jury that found him guilty deliberated for 2.5 days.
As constituted, meaning
yes.
That there was a
jury that the jury that actually
the jury in general deliberated for how long?
The jury 2 weeks, and in that point, at that time, they had dismissed a juror for cause because he wasn't getting paid. It was going longer than it should have, and he wasn't getting paid anymore. He dismissed that juror.
Was this question after that jury was dismissed or before?
No, it came the morning of the second day of deliberations.
So it was before he was dismissed.
It was before he was dismissed, correct. And then the jury has constituted.
And then it went on for another week and a half after, or a week or so after this question.
And then they excused the juror. And then they seated an alternate juror, and then 2.5 days later, they came to the jury.
If I understand your opponent's argument, petitioner's argument, it is if we conclude that the jury could have found him guilty of arson, but for whatever reason, not decided to proceed on first-degree murder, or the jury might, the other way around, if we conclude that the jury might not have found him guilty of arson, but for giving this alternative for a compromise, is that enough?
I think that belies...
To grant relief, and if so, why not? I think that's his argument. If not, he'll correct it.
I think it belies the record, too. They were given the choice of finding him guilty of manslaughter and not guilty of arson. They rejected that. And... I think also
after they got the charge that was erroneous as a matter of California law.
Correct. Afterwards.
But after they were presented with the opportunity to compromise.
Yes. But also, I would also state that the evidence of his guilt on arson was overwhelming. It wasn't there was substantial evidence. It was overwhelming evidence. And that evidence included even the testimony of Dr. Markman, which he relies on, concluded that he was sane at the time of the incident with the capacity to appreciate his acts, and he knew the difference between right and wrong. Dr. Markman did detail his conditions, but he ultimately concluded he was sane and he knew what he was doing.
Was there evidence that he was essentially following voices or something?
He told Dr. Markman that voices told him to pour out the
gasoline. Did Dr. Markman dispute that?
Excuse me?
Did Dr. Markman accept that or dispute that? Or?
No, I think... I think he just from my read of the testimony, is that he wasn't so insane that he didn't know what he was doing, that he could have the capacity to realize that.
Well, then he was pouring the gasoline on the floor, but what if he really thought he was pouring on the floor because some voices told him to do it? and just didn't think about what was going
to
happen.
I think that goes to intent. But if you look at even the evidence, the gasoline pour was, there was a debate whether it was lit with an open flame or the space heater. But the space heater is 10 inches away from his grandmother's bed. And the evidence is that the gasoline was not just poured on the carpet, it was poured on his grandmother's bed. And that just...
it's also the observation of the people, the brother and the police officer, that the only flame they saw was over by the door, some distance from the grandmother's bed.
Then that, I think that would indicate that it was lit by an open flame. Because if the space heater is only 10 inches away from the bed, and there's a fire away from that bed, or away by the door, then I think it indicates that it was an open flame.
Did the jury hear testimony about the petitioner having acted because he heard voices? Was that, I don't know, was that before the jury?
That was before the jury. Okay. It was testimony, because in this case, too, he also admitted to Dr. Markman that he had bought the gasoline, placed it in a plastic container, and poured it on the floor. And then he told him that he heard voices telling him to use it.
There was a partially burned or partially melted nozzle that fit the gasoline can that was found, right?
Yeah, it was found in his trunk as he was at the Mexican border. And also, I think, too, his fleeing from the scene shows a consciousness of guilt. I mean, granted,
apparently
there was a fire.
He was just leaving all the time.
Yeah, but he was seen with the gas container before the fire. After the fire was lit and his mother woke up, he was seen fleeing the scene.
Well,
and
he saw him driving away, but this guy had just gotten his car in trouble for days routinely.
But this was directly after the fire and the fire alarm was going off. I mean, there is, of course, could be coincidence that he's leaving the house exactly the time of the fire, but I would submit that leaving at the time he did, it reflects a consciousness of guilt of knowing what he did, knowing that the fire would start, knowing that his grandmother would die, and he just left.
Well, the grandmother dying doesn't have anything to do with the arson, right? You know, it has a lot to do with it, but it's not essential to the guilt for arson.
You know, it doesn't have much to do with it on the first-degree murder. On the second-degree murder, it kind of would be, because if it was proven that she was, I guess, dead before the arson started, then it wouldn't be first-degree felony murder. Because if she had died as a result, say she had died in her sleep and then he had lit her on fire, then at that point there probably wouldn't be a...
But there was no evidence.
There's no evidence of that, but at that point there probably would be no felony first-degree murder, because it would have to cause the death of the grandmother.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No, unless the court has any questions.
Thank you very much for this argument. I'll give you 1 minute to rebuttal.
Okay, yes, Your Honor. Just a few points with regard to the instructions. On page 65 of the excerpts of record, there is the instruction with regard to murder. And it murder without statement of degree. Murder is defined as killing with malice aforethought or occurring during the commission of an or attempted commission of arson. So they have an instruction that says generally murder is either malice or arson. And then you look at the instructions on second degree. Murder of the second degree is also the unlawful killing of a human being with malice aforethought. Also. That is to say, the jury is being told it can be with malice aforethought. And then on page 70, we have another instruction that says that it can be basically the product of implied malice. Murder of the second degree is also the unlawful killing with implied malice. Now, you put those together, and the jury could, on the basis of those instructions, being told that they can find second-degree murder along with arson, could conclude that the arson would replace the malice for second-degree murder. As to Dr. Markham's testimony, he did not say that the defendant knew what he was doing. He did say he was sane and therefore was capable of knowing what he was doing, but he did not say he knew what he was doing in this context. His testimony at pages 2, 2763 to 64 of the reporter's transcript was that he poured the gasoline because he was hearing voices that told him to do so, and he was following those voices. As to the evidence with regard to the fire, there was no clear evidence that any gasoline was poured on the bed. There was a suggestion of that, and there was evidence that there was no clear evidence of that. There was no evidence of an open fire causing the fire, that is to say, an open flame being used. There was only the evidence of the heater. Basically, there is nothing. Oh, and as to flight, in respondent's brief, they state that he was fleeing to Mexico when arrested. In fact, he was coming across the border from Mexico to the United States when he was arrested. Yes, Your Honor.
Where is the instruction on first-degree murder?
The instruction on first-degree, let me see. Here we are. It's on page 67 of the excerpts of record, Your Honor.
I see. So it's after the other one about the arson.
Yes. Yes. There is an instruction about arson that precedes the instructions on both first and second degree. So we have the statement that murder can be found on the basis of arson instead of malice. And then we have an instruction on first degree murder. And then we have that clearly says that is a substitution that can be made. And then we have a second-degree murder instruction. Yes, Your Honor.
Any felony murder instruction of the usual kind that says if you find that he committed a felony and this was in the course of the felony, he would be guilty of first-degree murder. Was there such an instruction?
Yes, there was a first-degree felony murder instruction on page 68, Your Honor.
I see.
But that certainly didn't negate the general instruction that any murder can be based on arson rather than malice. And there's nothing in the second degree instructions that says that that's not the case for second degree.
Okay. Thank you very much
for
your arguments. The case of Kajarian versus Evans is submitted.